We're going to proceed now as we begin to dolly back, as we move from Elm Street to Wall Street. We're going to take a look at a second and a more important way in which this Galen-related petroleum intelligence milieu functioned in connection with the assassination of President Kennedy. And what we're going to look at here is how Peter Gregory, the man who distorted Marina's testimony in such a way as to make the international communist conspiracy disinformation more plausible, how he was responsible for introducing Marina Oswald to a milieu surrounding the Great Southwest Corporation. Now, the Great Southwest Corporation, which figures in a prominent way here, is a major capital venture between the Wynn family, W-Y-N-N-E, and the Rockefellers. And here we're going to begin to make the transition, again, from Elm Street to Wall Street. Returning again to government documents and the JFK assassination by Peter Dale Scott. Scott writes, "At the beginning of this study, we examined Peter Gregory's distorted, quote, translation, unquote, of Marina Oswald's testimony to supply the baseless story already reported by Gregory's friend Mamontov of Oswald's, quote, dark and scopeless, unquote, rifle. Because this story was ultimately not used, and the, quote, corroboration, unquote, for it painstakingly discredited, it might appear that Gregory's role in the Dallas cover-up, even if improper, was a small one not worth examining in such detail. Gregory, however, played a second and more lasting role in the post-assassination history of Marina Oswald. It is Gregory who assumed responsibility for delivering Marina into the hands of employees and lawyers of the Great Southwest Corporation, a real estate venture which, in the wake of a later major scandal, was revealed to have been controlled tightly in 1963 by the wealthy Wynn family in Dallas, allies of the Murchisons, and the even more wealthy Rockefeller family in New York. One such employee, James Herbert Martin, M-A-R-T-I-N, soon became Marina's manager. After he was fired, William A. McKenzie, capital A-M-C, capital K-E-N-Z-I-E, a lawyer from the Wynn family law firm, which represented Great Southwest, became Marina Oswald's lawyer. Both men, along with still other employees of Great Southwest, were responsible for highly questionable, quote, links, unquote, between Oswald and the Carcano rifle, some of which were again discarded by the Warren Commission. It was Martin who negotiated the sale of the retouched photograph of Oswald with the rifle. McKenzie, according to the testimony of two witnesses under oath, improperly coached his client as to what she should tell the FBI about her husband and his rifle. Shortly after Gregory altered Marina's rifle testimony to add the gratuitous details that when she first saw it, quote, there was no scope, unquote, and, quote, the stock was longer, unquote, two Great Southwest employees told the FBI of seeing Oswald at a rifle range one day before the assassination. One of them specified that Oswald had, quote, a foreign gun, and it appeared the front end of the wood stock had been cut off, unquote. The Warren Report, quite properly, found, quote, no substantial basis, unquote, for believing this identification of Oswald. Quite improperly, it converted at least three similar, apparently independent and corroborative reports of shortened, quote, stock, unquote, into less suspicious accounts of a shortened, quote, barrel, unquote. Skipping down again. For wholly different reasons, it is clear in retrospect that Marina should never have been delivered into the hands of the Great Southwest Corporation. A Dallas investigative reporter has since accused Great Southwest, which later had Maurice Stans as a prominent shareholder and from 1965 to 68 employed Nixon's personal lawyer, Herbert Kalmbach, K-A-L-M-B-A-C-H, of involvement in a bankruptcy fraud with organized crime overtones. It is certain that highly questionable transfers of assets to Great Southwest, resulting in the second instance in criminal indictments for two Great Southwest directors, contributed to the spectacular bankruptcies of first the Webb and Knapp real estate empire in 1965, and second the Penn Central in 1970, the world's two greatest bankruptcies up to that time. Control of Great Southwest in late 1963, quote, was tightly centered in the Rockefeller and Wynn families, unquote, the Wynns being longtime close associates of the even more influential Murchisons. Bedford Wynn, the senior partner in the family law firm of Wynn, Jaffe, and Tinsley, T-I-N-S, oh, by the way, it's Wynn, of course, W-Y-N-N-E, Jaffe, J-A-F-F-E, Tinsley, T-I-N-S-L-E-Y, beginning again. Bedford Wynn was the senior partner in the family law firm of Wynn, Jaffe, and Tinsley, was a Washington troubleshooter for the powerful Murchison oil and construction interests in Texas. In 1963, his questionable lobbying activities were beginning to attract the attention of the federal government. Skipping down again. For whatever reason, the Great Southwest Corporation was not investigated, but protected by the Warren Commission investigation. An FBI report about the suspicious sale of Marina's story by its former employee, James Herbert Martin, to a semi-underworld character with an FBI record remained withheld until 1970. There was no scrutiny of the interlocking relationships between Peter Gregory, the Oswald family, the Secret Service, the Wynns, and the Great Southwest Corporation. No one examined Gregory's baseless addition to Marina's rifle story and its corroboration by a Great Southwest employee. No one challenged the circumstances under which a phone call from Gregory led, as we shall see, to reservations for Marina at Great Southwest's motel, reservations arranged for by Gregory's contact in the Secret Service. No one asked questions as to how the same Secret Service agent came to select Gregory as an, quote, interpreter, unquote, on Saturday, November 23rd. And skipping down again. Furthermore, the landlords had a special relationship of sorts with Marina Oswald as well, inasmuch as Morris Jaffe of the Wynn, Jaffe & Tinsley law firm was attorney for Marina's mysterious friend and protector, Baron George de Morenshield, whom Marina's own attorney from the same law firm, William McKenzie, also knew. And again, George de Morenshield also knew, among others, George Bush. Continuing. Howard's choice of the Inn of the Six Flags was, as we have seen, a momentous decision, since the motel's manager, James Herbert Martin, soon became Marina's agent and lodged her in his home. Marina, who sold Life the dubious photograph of Oswald posing with a rifle, later had Marina's life story taped and, quote, interpreted by Ilya Mamontov, the friend of Peter Gregory. Later still, Martin arranged for Marina's story to be ghostwritten by Isaac Don Levine, a veteran China lobbyist who had previously corroborated on anti-Soviet projects with the CIA and the CIA-subsidized Tolstoy Foundation. Like Mamontov, Levine reportedly, quote, was trying to tie in Oswald with the Communist Party, unquote, and with a, quote, a Russian connection conspiracy concept, unquote. Despite appearances, Howard's choice of the motel introducing Martin was probably not accidental, but deliberate. For in February, when Marina fired Martin and engaged a new lawyer called William A. McKenzie, she had not really changed protectors. Martin had been an employee of the Great Southwest Corporation. William A. McKenzie, a close college friend of Bedford Wynn, had only just resigned from Bedford Wynn's family law firm of Wynn, Jaffe, and Tinsley, the lawyers for Great Southwest, in order, so I have been reliably told, to become the lawyer for Marina. And skipping down again. If the Warren Commission had looked more closely at McKenzie, it would have found what it was ostensibly looking for, links between the world of Oswald and the world of Ruby. The report rightly concluded that, quote, it was unable to find any credible evidence to support the rumors linking Oswald and Ruby directly or through others, unquote. I would interject, that's not quite true. There were telephone records between Oswald and Ruby, as we looked at in July. Continuing. The rumors it chose to investigate were indeed false, but it would have been more profitable to have investigated certain facts, such as the business relationship between Marina's lawyer, William McKenzie, and Jack Ruby's former lawyer, Pete White. This relationship apparently explains the appearance of McKenzie's new office telephone number in the notebook of Jack Ruby's assistant, Larry Crawford, C-R-A-F-A-R-D. The commission was interested in Crawford, who fled Dallas right after the assassination. And skipping down again. The he here is Robert Oswald, Lee Harvey Oswald's brother. He also testified that McKenzie's law partners, Henry Bayer, B-A-E-R of Reliance Life, and Pete White, the man the name entered in Crawford's notebook, were persons, quote, known to me, unquote. The commission asked Crawford about Pete White, but they did not ask Robert Oswald. They should have. Pete White, who together with McKenzie had once served as assistant district attorney, told the FBI that he had got Ruby's charge of pistol carrying dismissed back in 1954 and that he, quote, ran into, unquote, Ruby on November 20th, 1963, 2 days before the assassination. And skipping down again, questions about Pete White might have opened up several possible connections to the underworld past of Jack Ruby, and also to the Minutemen, Cuban exile General Walker milieu supported by H.L. Hunt and his two sons. In 1962, one of Pete White's two partners was Ivan Irwin, I-R-W-I-N, formerly of the family law firm identified to the FBI by Paul R. Jones, a mafia representative, convicted dope trafficker, and associate of Ruby, as the conduit for payoffs by organized crime to local law enforcement officials. Irwin's son, Ivan Irwin Jr., was a lawyer for the Hunt oil interests and more particularly for Nelson Bunker Hunt, to whose office Ruby drove on November 21, 1963, 1 day after seeing White. Irwin represented Nelson Bunker Hunt in the matter of the anti-Kennedy advertisement. This ad, paid for in part by Hunt, had been arranged for by a young right-winger, Larry Schmidt, that's L-A-R-R-I-E-S-C-H-M-I-D-T, who, with help from General Walker, had organized the anti-Stevenson demonstrations, which became one of Dallas Police Chief Curry's reasons for recruiting outside security personnel on November 22nd. Robert Hatfield, H-A-T-F-I-E-L-D, the only member of Schmidt's group arrested at the Stevenson incident, engaged Pete White as his attorney. Larry Schmidt's semi-conspiratorial CUSA cabal, that's Conservatism USA cabal, which had captured the local chapter of the right-wing Young Americans for Freedom, included Warren Carroll, C-A-R-R-O-L-L, whom Schmidt described to a friend as a scriptwriter for H.L. Hunt, quote, and a former CIA man. Among Schmidt's other contacts were Dr. Robert Morris of the American Security Council, who in 1962 and 3 lobbied actively on behalf of General Walker, and Otto Otepka, O-T-E-P-K-A, the former State Department officer who had worked with Oswald's file and against Kennedy's policies toward Cuba, the Soviet Union, and Vietnam. Also, Morris's protege, Professor Anthony Kubek, K-U-B-E-K, of the American Security Council, author in 1963 of How the Far East Was Lost, a belated but timely McCarthyite attack on the State Department, who, like General Walker, attended a Cuban exile DRE meeting in Dallas-Fort Worth. Continuing here. Schmidt's CUSA member in charge of public relations, finally, was Art Franswald at the Bedford Wynne PR agency, indicating that CUSA had not only conspicuous links to right-wingers like Morris and the Hunts, but also, less conspicuously, to the vastly more influential, quote, center, unquote, world of the Wynns and their Murchison and Rockefeller allies as embodied in the Great Southwest Corporation. This rapprochement between the Pete White, Ruby, Irwin Hunt netherworld and the Bedford Wynne Rockefeller overworld is even better illustrated by the movement in late 1963 of Marina Oswald's mysterious attorney, William A. McKenzie, from the office of his old friend Bedford Wynne to that of his old friend Pete White. Well, that's a complicated tangle of elements here. I'm going to take a minute now and let's run this down. Now, again, it is Peter Gregory, a white Russian petroleum engineer, part of this rollback or liberation intelligence Galen-related milieu, petroleum milieu that we're looking at. He is the one who basically delivers Marina Oswald into the clutches, so to speak, of the Great Southwest Corporation, a major capital venture of the Wynne family and the Rockefellers. Now, an employee of Great Southwest, James Herbert Martin, becomes Marina's attorney, basically her manager. It is James Herbert Martin who sells the bogus photograph of Lee Harvey Oswald with a rifle he supposedly used to shoot President Kennedy to Life magazine. Martin is later fired by Marina Oswald. Other members of the Oswald family who fired him. But in any event, he is subsequently replaced by William McKenzie. Note also that James Herbert Martin recruited Ilya Mamontov, who we looked at earlier, corroborating the fellow who came up with a dark rifle scenario, which was mistranslated, which Gregory mistranslated Marina's testimony to corroborate. Later, it is James Herbert Martin who recruits Ilya Mamontov to have Marina's life story taped. He also, Martin that is, again, employee of the Great Southwest Corporation, this joint Rockefeller-Wynn venture, which later intersected significantly with people around Richard Nixon, such as his personal attorney. It is James Herbert Martin of Great Southwest who recruits Isaac Don Levine, closely associated with the CIA and a major figure in Cold War history, to ghostwrite Marina's story. And Isaac Don Levine is trying to develop a Soviet conspiracy scenario. Now, we looked at Isaac Don Levine in Radio Free America 15. It was Isaac Don Levine who first introduced Whitaker Chambers to Adolph Burley, it was Adolph Burley. This ultimately led to Whitaker Chambers' testimony against Alger Hiss in that famous Cold War scandal. Earlier, Isaac Don Levine had ghostwritten a book called Out of the Night, supposedly written by a Soviet agent named Jan Valtin, but in fact this book appears to have been an English translation of a Third Reich forgery, which was put together by a German intelligence agent, a Third Reich intelligence agent named Richard Krebs. Now, after Martin is fired, he is replaced by William McKenzie. William McKenzie is an attorney for Wynn, Jaffe, and Tinsley, which handles the legal work for Great Southwest Corporation. Also, the Morris Jaffe of this same firm handles the legal work for George de Morenshield, who we've looked at earlier, and William McKenzie also is a friend of George de Morenshield, as was apparently George Bush as well. Now, William McKenzie becomes a law partner of a guy named Pete White, whom he had previously known as they had both worked as assistant DAs in Dallas. Now, Pete White had earlier gotten Jack Ruby's charge of carrying a pistol dismissed in 1954, and coincidentally or not, he later, that is, Pete White, runs into Jack Ruby on November 20th, 1963, 2 days before the assassination. Now, before Pete White becomes William McKenzie's law partner, and bear in mind that Pete White's address is in Ruby's assistant. No, actually, it was McKenzie's new office telephone number is in the address book, the notebook of Ruby's assistant, Larry Crawford. Before McKenzie, formerly of Wynn, Jaffe, and Tinsley, handling the legal work for Great Southwest, before he replaces Great Southwest employee James Herbert Martin as Marina's manager, Pete White, the new partner of McKenzie, is a law partner with Ivan Irwin and Ivan Irwin Jr., both of whom, when they were working together as a family law firm, were involved in apparently making payoffs by organized crime to local law enforcement officials. Now, Irwin Jr. was, and again, Ivan Irwin is the former law partner of Pete White, who becomes McKenzie's partner. Ivan Irwin is an attorney for the Hunt oil interests and becomes an attorney for Nelson Bunker Hunt when Nelson Bunker Hunt is worried about his legal status in connection with an ad in the Dallas Morning News basically accusing Kennedy of treason. Now, that ad was paid for in part by Nelson Bunker Hunt and was arranged by a young right-winger named Larry Schmidt, who, as we looked at in Radio Free America program number 11, had emigrated to the Dallas-Fort Worth area from Munich, Germany. And one wonders perhaps whether he might have in some way been connected with the International Committee for the Defense of Christian Culture, a German-based intelligence network of which Nelson Bunker Hunt was the Texas representative. That involved a number of Galen and ABN-related elements. We looked at that in our second installment of this archive program. Now, Larry Schmidt's group, which works directly with Edwin Walker, okay, the fellow we looked at in our second installment, Larry Schmidt's group is the group that organizes, along with Walker, the anti-Stevenson demonstrations. Those demonstrations were the excuse for recruiting outside security personnel, in all probability, some of the Army Intelligence and Army Intelligence Reserve people who functioned in connection with this Galen Petroleum Intelligence Milieu in Dealey Plaza. The only member of Larry Schmidt's CUSA group to be arrested is a guy named Robert Hatfield, and he is represented by Pete White, the guy who William McKenzie becomes a law partner with. And note again that a guy named Warren Carroll, a former CIA man, works with CUSA. He's a former scriptwriter for H.L. Hunt. And note also that Larry Schmidt's organization is directly connected to people like Professor Anthony Kubek, K-U-B-E-K, and former Joe McCarthy aide Dr. Robert Morris of the American Security Council that we looked at in our second part. That organization deeply involved with the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations and a group whose genesis goes all the way back to Harry Young's American Vigilant Intelligence Federation. Note also that Schmidt's CUSA group has its PR handled by Art Franzwald, F-R-A-N-Z-W-A-L-D, of the Bedford Wynne Public Relations Agency. And bear in mind that two other employees of the Great Southwest Corporation helped corroborate Peter Gregory's bogus account of the shortened stock of Oswald's rifle. Now bear in mind here again, this is a complicated, obviously a complicated tangle of elements and events, but this is by way of looking at how this same milieu operates in conjunction with the cover-up of the Kennedy's assassination. But here we begin to see much more powerful political and economic elements involved here. Again, as we begin moving from Elm Street to Wall Street, we encounter the Great Southwest Corporation, and Gregory is front and center in introducing Marina Oswald, or delivering them into the hands of the Great Southwest Corporation. And the significance of this, because what we're looking at with this milieu, as we talked about in the first two installments of RFA 37, what we're looking at is a synthesis of the American far right, the American radical right, such as the John Birch Society elements grouped around the Hunts and Walker, with the U.S. National Security Establishment, elements of our own intelligence system, and some of these same Third Reich, White Russian, Galen-related, ABN-related elements that we've looked at the core of the rollback or liberation theory. And as Peter Dale Scott puts it here, Schmidt's CUSA member in charge of public relations, finally, was Art Franzwald, F-R-A-N-Z-W-A-L-D, again, of the Bedford Wynne PR agency, indicating that CUSA had not only conspicuous links to right-wingers like Morris and the Hunts, but also, less conspicuously, and this is the important part of this segment of the Scott's monograph, but also, less conspicuously, to the vastly more influential center world of the Wynns and their Murchison and Rockefeller allies as embodied in the Great Southwest Corporation. This rapprochement between the Pete White, Ruby, Irwin Hunt netherworld and the Bedford Wynn Rockefeller overworld is even better illustrated by the movement in late 1963 of Marina Oswald's mysterious attorney, William A. McKenzie, from the office of his old friend Bedford Wynn to that of his old friend Pete White. And again, that's the significance. This milieu is not just Third Reich holdovers and radical right-wingers operating in conjunction with elements of our intelligence system, but from a functional, analytical standpoint, we are beginning to see this milieu as functioning in the political and economic context which basically empowered it, namely powerful, powerful corporate interests. And again, I'm looking at this petroleum Galen intelligence milieu in the context of the macro-political and macroeconomic forces which permitted the interaction of the Galen organization and related elements with American society. That interaction permitted the profound political effect that Galen had on American and world history in the Cold War era. Now, again, as we dolly back still further, we're going to take a look at an even more complicated set of relationships. I'm not going to take the time to detail everything beyond reading the text. One of the things that is most convincing and also, from a radio standpoint, most frustrating about presenting Peter Dale Scott's material in both the Dallas Conspiracy and in government documents in the JFK assassination is that this massive pair of documents, probably some 400 pages combined, copiously footnoted, details a very complex, highly interlocked web of political, military, national security, and economic forces, and it literally becomes dizzying. And if that sounds like something of an exaggeration, if you thought the Great Southwest Corporation analysis, which I just touched on, and again, that nexus, the Great Southwest Corporation nexus, representing a synthesis of major American corporate power with the American far right, the same Galen ABN-related elements and elements of the national security establishment, what we're going to look at now really could be said to represent the intersection, the operational intersection of major American corporate power with the elements that carried out the assassination, this coup, this triumph in a formal way of liberation or rollback theory over containment theory. We're going to take a look now at how the worlds of Ruby and Oswald were basically controlled by major and interlocking corporate interests. And again, take a look at the fact that the national security establishment, and including this same petroleum, Galen-related white Russian intelligence milieu with which we began our analysis and of which, as we shall see again, George Bush was a part, this milieu functioned at the operational level at the behest of these interests. What we're going to be looking at now is how an individual named Robert Anderson serves as a point of intersection between, or a vehicle, uniting a number of different political, economic, national security interests. Now, Robert Anderson was a major Texas oil lobbyist. Lyndon Johnson telephoned Robert Anderson a few hours after Kennedy's assassination, quite possibly to talk to Anderson about the assassination. I want to emphasize that there's never been any evidence that I'm aware of linking Anderson to the assassination, but in examining Anderson's connections, and he was very heavily connected. He was Eisenhower's Secretary of the Treasury, deeply involved with the Texas petroleum industry, deeply involved with major financial interests and corporate interests. As we take a look at the connecting links between the world of Robert Anderson and also by extension the world of LBJ as well as Richard Nixon, and we're going to take a look at how these major corporate forces intersect with and involve the worlds of Jack Ruby and Lee Harvey Oswald. I'm not going to detail all the connections. That would take a long time. And indeed, one of the most compelling aspects of Peter Dale Scott's presentation is the extent to which he documents but the major overlapping capital participation of many of these interests, the interlocking corporate directorates of many of these interests, and in turn illustrates how these very powerful forces, these powerful corporate forces, intersect with the people that we see at the operational level, like Ruby, Oswald, Gregory, Mamontov, etc. What I am going to do is identify some of the major players here. We're going to take a look at the Wagner estate of Texas, Vernon, Texas. We're going to take a look at the First National Bank of Fort Worth. We're going to take a look at the LTV Corporation, Ling Temco Vought, a major aerospace contractor which benefited directly from Johnson's escalation of the Cold War and the Vietnam War in particular. We're going to take a look at General Dynamics, also a company that benefited from the assassination and the escalation of the defense industry. General Dynamics was involved in the production of the TFX fighter bomber that later became the F-111. Note that the attorney for General Dynamics, Albert Jenner, J-E-N-N-E-R, or an attorney, became a key Warren Commission counsel, and it was Jenner who later served as House Minority Counsel in the GOP counsel in the Watergate scandal, Jenner was in charge with seeing whether or not Lee Harvey Oswald was part of a conspiracy. Now, we're also going to take a look at Dresser Industries. Now, it was a subsidiary of Dresser, IDECO, Idaco, that was George Bush's first employer, and which, according to Anthony Kimmery's analysis, part of which we will review, may very well have served as the corporate cover for George Bush's apparent or probable early work on behalf of the intelligence community. And we're going to take a look at the interlocking, directorate, but we're going to take a look at Lewis McNaughton of the DeGolyer and McNaughton Petroleum Engineering Firm, again, connected with Declan Ford, connected with George Bue, two of the people from this White Russian Galen-related milieu that we looked at in the first part of our program. And we're going to take a look at how McNaughton served as a director of Dresser Industries, chairman of the board of Dresser Industries, was Prescott Bush's friend, George Bush's virtual godfather, Henry Neal Mallon. That was the guy who got George Bush his job with DeGolyer and McNaughton. We're also going to take a look at major capital interests associated with the Loeb Rhodes corporations or corporate interests, and also, again, the Great Southwest Corporation. Again, I'm not going to detail these connections past a point, but I'm going to look at 7 of the 10 ways in which the milieu of Robert Anderson relates to the milieu, plural, of Oswald and Ruby. And here, we will, in a sense, we can begin to see the major links between Elm Street in Dealey Plaza and Wall Street, and we will continue to take a look at those links in another section of this essay. Now, here we're going to jump from government documents in the JFK assassination to the Dallas conspiracy by Peter Dale Scott. Peter Dale Scott writes, and again, this is very complicated, and the phenomenal degree of intersection, both overlapping capital participation as well as interlocking directorates and business associations, is one of the things which shows the corporate milieu, the larger economic and political forces at whose behest some of these homme de masse, some of the operational functionaries, were performing.